Want to hear more from your favorite Wolf Brothers? Head on over to patreon.com/thankthelight. And right now, for $3, you can have access to 6 exclusive episodes with plenty more on the way. Justin, Jeremy, and Desmond are talking about other fantasy movies over there because we don't want to put any Wheel of Time content behind a paywall. And just to boost the value, I'm putting our Time Pop Patreon episodes there too. That is my time travel podcast, where our Patreon episodes, we are talking about alternate / parallel universes / different worlds. Again, trying to do something different than our regular time travel feed. And if you like that, check out the free Time Pop feed with over 100 episodes to listen to. Please like, subscribe, and tell a friend about Thank the Light. Sign up for Patreon. Now enjoy this episode of Thank the Light. Hey, everybody. One more interruption before we begin this episode properly. This is going down as another one of our famous not-mentaries. Never fear. This one is lacking all of the Kevin Smith movies, so stay tuned. The editor showed up, and we are long overdue for a conversation with the editor, especially since season 2 started. So we got super off topic, just kind of talking about not off topic. We are talking about the Wheel of Time very much. We just got off episode quite a bit because this was finally our chance to talk about the greater universe of the Wheel of Time television series. So there is still a little bit of the episode in there. You know, I dropped in a few, I left a few episode excerpts in there just for touchstones, but this episode will not play along. If you have been playing along with us and actually watching the episodes along with these, this one is not going to quite follow along, but it is a very good episode. Enjoy and stay tuned. Next week, we get way off topic in our annual let's blow off some steam and reboot for next season Wheel of Time. Happy New Year. Thanks for listening. See you soon. I'm going to get it paused. He's here. He's here.
Who's here?
The editor.
Hey.
Good morning. Evening, I guess.
Good morning for you, brother. Good timing. We just finished the episode 7.
Fantastic.
This is the one I wanted you here for. I know that's the one you said you wanted to be here for, too. So.
Yeah, exactly. It gives us a chance to talk about the last episode and the whole season overall.
Yeah, we were just talking about the 7th episode and I mean, we've just been chatting about, you know, next season and, you know, things that I hope, you know, even if they're little weird things. We were just talking about in episode 7 how, you know, Suan kind of almost compulses Moraine to shut the Waygate. But to me,
that was weird.
I felt like it was almost a more fucked up version of it because when people are being compulsed, they don't really realize it, I think. And, you know.
Yeah.
Moraine knew exactly what Suan was doing. Suan is, you know, looking her dead in her face and making it happen. And then I think that's a way big betrayal for the friendship and trust that they had in their lives. So
for sure. And it's because of that oath in, what was it? Season 1, episode 6, that she was able to do that. And I don't know. It feels like they're giving her the arc of Elida, almost. Suan, that is. So I don't exactly know what they're shooting for. Maybe this is the reason why things that will happen later happen. And I guess it will come next season.
We'll see.
Let's see what happens.
Oh, man, I'm so excited to talk to you, dude.
I don't know if you guys saw, I was busy editing season 2 and I put out like one clip, which is exactly this clip at the Waygates in episode 7. And I basically cut out this whole...
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh, go and watch it. Go and watch it. And let me know what you think. Okay, then let me not spoil it. Maybe just watch the clip. Let me know what you think. It can be a little bit smoother, so I'll keep working on it. But I've made some tweaks, put it that way.
Is it on your ex?
It's on the YouTube. Yeah.
Thank the light, everybody. And this is what is meant to be. Welcome to our final commentary of the season. Season 2, Episode 8, What Was Meant to Be. We're going to watch the whole episode, talk all the way through the episode. We're going to be a little bit all over the place. We're going to try to follow along the episode a little bit, but we're not going to stick to it too much because we have a very special guest here who I'm sure Justin has a lot of questions for that go way beyond just Episode 8, and that is okay. Welcome the editor.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you having me on and looking forward to the discussion.
Dr. Editor.
Thank you so much for being here. We got a lot to get to with the commentary, so we don't have a lot of time, but just how is your editing of season 2 coming along? Like, do you think it's going to be shorter, longer, about the same as season 1?
It's a very good question. Put it this way. I started and then I kind of stalled out at the moment. I just need to find the time, I guess, and then also a little bit the motivation. I felt like, you know, it's funny. I think in the broadcast, season 2 was the stronger season of season 1. But in the editing, I'm finding that I almost think that season 1 had the more cohesive story. Like there was really a story to tell, right? In season 1 of this journey of the kids and Rand realizing he's the dragon and so on. Season 2, the more I edit, the less I find like the structural story in the material. And it's kind of hard to think who's really the protagonist of the season and, you know, whose story are we telling?
I know. It's so funny. Is it Lanfear's story?
Yes. I'm going to say it's Lanfear and Ishamael's story. So I actually think they're the two protagonists.
Yeah.
And I think how you need to open the season is the episode 4 cold open. So when Ishamael is going to wake her and unleash her from the seal, that should be the opening. And then the rest of the season needs to revolve around the two of them. And I guess our heroes are sort of just, you know, they are there, but primarily it's Lanfear's story in the end. Ishamael is the secondary protagonist. And I guess that's how you structure it around. Because I think they're the ones who have the most, let's say, story in the season, right? I feel like our team the Light, I suppose, are more or less sort of passive protagonists. Things happen to them and they go through the journey, but they don't take a really active role. And this is what I'm finding as well.
Yeah.
You know, what do you cut? What do you keep? What's important? Where's the story going, really? But that's a bit what I'm struggling with. And I put it to bed for a while. I'm going to pick it up again later.
Nice. It's an underused artistic necessity. Just sleep on it.
Yeah. I think some of the things that you pointed out are some of the problems that old cousin has a problem with. It's where is the story going? The first season, you know, even though they cut things and changed things, you still kind of knew where they were going. This one, it's you know, it's just
things just happen.
Like you said, I never thought of it that way, but it definitely seems like it's more Lanfear and Ishi's story than anybody else's. So
yeah, think about who's driving the plot forward, right? It's the two of them. They're the ones pushing the characters towards farm in the end. They're the ones, you know, sort of being the driving force for the narrative through the season. And our characters are simply reacting to necessity rather than proactively doing anything themselves.
Which makes sense because, yeah, none of our characters even want to be on this journey, which is true to the book. Like, they still just want to go home to the Two Rivers.
That's fair.
So it makes sense that they would be drug along a little bit.
I'm just wondering how much we lose by having this, whatever, 5-6 month time skip at the beginning. Because in the book, I think Egwene and Nynaeve want to go to the White Tower. So they have at least some agency. Whereas in the season, we skip 5-6 months ahead and they're already there. So we don't see them taking an active role in wanting to go. And then, of course, this is the other big thing. The boys are on the hunt for the dagger because they have to, right? Because of Matt.
Yeah, because they have to find it because Matt can't be separated for too long.
And in the season, there is no sense of urgency around. So there's no driving force. They're just after it because of the horn. They're not after the dagger at all. And this is interesting. The more you think about it, the more you realize they took out the parts that give our characters agency. And kind of now you're just left with them. They're just going about their business for no real driving reason and more reactive than really proactive, you know?
So real quick, so when this episode is over, I am just going to be done and out of here. Just warning you guys when the credits roll on the episode. So up top, I want to make sure that you give out your information where people can find what you do, because it's awesome. And if you're a fan of...
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Where can people find your amazing version of season one?
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it. If anyone's interested, so just a quick synopsis. I cut season one into a film structured around more or less our protagonists and Rand as the dragon, you know, meaning to or needing to realize his destiny and accept his fate. You can find me everywhere on social media on We Love Time Fan Edit. So that's on Twitter or X, on YouTube, on Reddit. And then in all my socials, the link to the actual film is there. You're able to download or stream it online. So it should be easy to access. There's a website, Firemerk Studios, where they're hosting it. You can find it on there as well.
Awesome. And yeah, and we fully support the editor's efforts and versions. And, you know, I like the show, but, you know, going forward, rewatching to get prepared for the coming season is only going to get more and more daunting. And if for no other reason to watch the fan edit, just to streamline your rewatch to prepare for the upcoming season, it's a great, great tool out there for fans of the show and the books.
Thanks. I really appreciate the praise.
And go nuts. Like I said, we're excited to have you here. So I'm, you know, the conversation's going to wane around. Like I said, I will, once we get close to the climax, I'm going to try to rein us in to talk about what's actually happening on screen. Otherwise, wherever the conversation takes us.
If we get too off track a couple of times, I might do a couple pauses since it's just me and you, just because we haven't got to talk to him. But not too long. Is that okay?
Yeah. That, and also just don't worry about it too much. Like, you know, like I said, unless there's something that we...
Mostly I'll just pause if there's something in the show I really want to talk to about, right? Okay. Cool. Okay. I'm ready when you are, bro. I'm at 7 seconds. So
season two, episode 8, what was meant to be 0000. I'll press play and then I'll show you, Justin, so you can, and I'm on the Prime and we're going to watch the previously on.
You told them when you were there. Did you think that protects them? Just makes them easy for a Charmeil to get to. No!
More wolf you are. No, you're mine.
What are you?
Where will we go now?
Farm.
No, you can't go. You kill Rand.
This tea shows you things. Lets you glimpse your past lives. And through all of that, the real one.
Don't prick like him.
Did you feel it? Our affinity? You can never hurt me. You will never leave me.
I will.
What do you think it'll do?
I don't know, but I hope it hurts.
Turok has a run of curiosities. It's barely guarded. The hall is what matters, Builder.
Aren't you worried I'll betray you?
Will you?
They would never turn.
I thought that too once.
Tell me what he's planning.
What do you think Rand would do when he sees his friends on the loss?
Tell me!
He will break.
Why farm of all places?
The dragon is supposed to proclaim himself there.
They want everyone to know who I am.
Wait for it.
Before they try to kill.
Wait for it. Episode 8 starts. Oh, 3,000 years ago, now.
No bello sovia vacna ninte. Hasavit inde. Sukiat lal sana santa saliet. Nal no miniat. Mogedien samael. Zafin sien chaydaran. Kalal iro diane luz. Washirva fulit. Yugen al makitaya, yes, desta. Sana sane no yugende.
What do you think of the tea scene, editor? Talk to us about the episode 7 tea scene with Matt seeing his...
Yeah, what do you think of the tea scene and what do you think that that means for the elfin and the eelfin?
I don't know. That scene is so weird. So I watch a few different reviewers on YouTube. And I think universally, I don't think that scene is well-liked, right? But both because it's just, it's weird in context, the way Charmaine sets it up. You know, drink this tea and you'll have visions of the past. And the only time I ever had a good night's sleep is when I had this tea, etc. And then I don't like it. But short, long story short, I don't like it. I hope it doesn't substitute for what Matt's journey is in the books, you know, and how his memories sort of get filled and this type of thing. I'm not a fan. Like, I'm really not a fan.
Yeah, we were just talking about that in the last episode, and maybe it's, because I didn't realize that Matt has another, I didn't know about the doorways that the boys are going to walk through at some point to see some of their past, and maybe that's why this scene is kind of done so poorly, because they just want to give us a taste, so maybe it won't be feel so poor when, oh, that's right, in the full intro, I forget that the full opening credits scene.
Oh, yeah, we get the full intro this time, but I think you're right, Dez. I'm hoping that they're giving you a taste because the Aielfin and the Aielfin will be slightly kind of psychedelic, and that's getting you kind of ready for it.
Hope so.
And that I don't think that we'll get both. I think we'll get one of them.
Yeah.
Or we'll get the snakes and the foxes together as a, you know, a group, and then they'll go through the doorway, and then Matt will get. I mean, they showed us Matt hanging last episode, so I gotta think that that's probably gonna happen, right?
Yeah, that has to happen.
Some version
of it will happen next season, because we know they're going there.
I am so confused as to all of the it's funny, with as much shit as Justin and Jeremy have spoiled for me, they have managed to keep me in the dark of all the trauma that is going to befall Matt.
I mean, it's not even, it's, I mean, it doesn't even have, I mean, yeah, I guess it's trauma, but
he gets hung and his eye poked out. And you guys keep telling me that, like,
I didn't say
that's not the worst part that happens to him in the series.
That's not true. Wait, what'd you say?
I said, that's not the worst that happens to him in the series.
Getting hung is not the worst.
What's worse? I'm thinking of what's worse.
The whole Thailand arc. Thailand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he kind of gets framed for murder. Like, really horrific murder. I forgot about that. Not exactly, but, you know, it's not great. The golem is messed up.
Yeah.
It's like having a non-metallic Terminator after you. Okay, here's a quick question. What do you think about them making us like characters that we're supposed to fucking hate, like Leandrin and Dane Bornhold?
So
I like Dane Bornhold immediately, and I hate myself for it.
Yeah, I mean, in context, it's done really well. Obviously designed exactly for that, the knife twist, right? That you really feel that visceral reaction when they turn bad. And I think they want us almost.
Yeah, because you don't, when Dane goes bad in the book, you don't know enough about him for it to matter that much. You just know, like, oh, my dad died.
Yeah, he's just a vanilla bad guy who's wrong about what actually happened, right? Here is, you can see his POV. You can see how much he believes he's right, and he actually has a real reason in the books, not a mistaken one to go after a parent.
Yeah, no shit. I forgot about that. Actually, I it's funny. I think before the episode came out, I'd have to go look it, but I know you know some of the characters on the X, the Dane-ish character, the guy who's basically in character as Dane Bornhold. I was like, hey, maybe Perrin's dad actually does, or maybe Perrin does kill your dad in this turning of the wheel. And he's like, what do you know? I was like, nothing. It's just a guess. But I was right. I do love how Lanfear just kind of throws him out of the way gate, like, the fuck out.
Bye.
I'm going to take my guy, and you guys are going to walk the rest of the way to town. We're going to go to the party.
It's so weird that, I mean, she could have sent them anywhere, couldn't she? Like, why did she even allow them to be within walking distance of where they were going? Or I forget, are the doorways, like, are they set? Like, this door always goes to that place, and this door always goes to that place?
Yeah, the ways are not just like, oh, go here, go there. That's like, they would be close. They have way gates. I mean, they are acting kind of, I don't know, tell me what you think, editor. Like, they seem to act like there's more to me in this world, or at least they know about more of them. Because this one's not super far away from where they were going. Because, you know, what, they walked there in like a day.
That doesn't belong here. This will be a long morning, I think.
What does that mean?
Many people will wake from the dream today.
Obviously, that waygate that Lanfear just kind of flicked them out of is fairly close. You know, it's within walking distance to Falm. So Lanfear obviously takes them to another way gate, I'm assuming, right?
No, so Lanfear boots them after that way gate, and then she travels with herself and Rand to Falm directly, right? With the, you know, how they disappeared when Machin Shin came for them, right?
So she does travel. Do we see that?
Yes, we do. So just watch that scene where Machin Shin is crowding around them.
Oh.
She does a flick or something, and then when those bird things of Machin Shin disappear, they're already gone.
Is it the same way that Mugidin travels at the end?
Yeah, could be. Could be.
From what you see, do you think it's more like kind of how they describe traveling with the true power in the books?
Well, we don't know for sure. I mean, DVD, right? Let's see how it goes. I might lose signal for a minute.
I'm not saying they're using the true power, but the way they describe how traveling with the true power looks in the books, how they kind of just like kind of like fold in on darkness. That's what we see Mugidin do at the end of this episode. Do you think that's going to just be regular traveling?
That's a really good question, because I don't know that they've established enough of the one power to still to introduce. Maybe that's a hint of the true power, but they still have to establish properly the rules of the one power before they can, you know, complicate the magic system further.
But we got to see the true power earlier this season.
We did when Lanfear resurrected herself. But put yourself in the eyes of a show viewer, right? It's just magic, right? It's not one type of magic and another type of magic. So I don't know how much they're going to lean into making that distinction, since they haven't really leaned into a proper explanation of the one power just yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking, is because, you know, in the books, true power or no, you can't heal yourself. And so what's your opinion of Lanfear healing herself? Do you think that's just the Dark One kind of like marionetting her and giving her back her life, or is that going to be magic mechanics for the show?
I think that's the Dark One, because you see the black threads go into her as she heals up. So I think that's really the Dark One. Call it the Dark One, call it the true power, or the Dark One through the true power, you know, healing her. And
well, true power is the Dark One's essence, so
exactly. Yeah, I think that's clearly what the visuals are trying to show.
Okay, next question about that. Do you think that is the Dark One going, healing her? Okay, you're healed. Or what I was kind of thinking is that him kind of like almost like similar to Hermione in Prisoner of Azkaban with her, I'm going to turn it back three times and go back this far. What if that's the Dark One just, I'm going to reverse time for Lanfear for 2 minutes?
I think it's actually healing, or is it, you know what? It could probably be resurrecting, to be honest with you. Not even just healing. I think she's actually dead. I mean, she's been stabbed through the heart with a throat slit. So,
I mean, she looks dead to me. So,
I think she's dead. And then I think it's a resurrection.
Cool.
Not a reverse time thing. If it was a reverse time, they would have somehow played the clip backwards and, you know, shown her mirroring the movements of when she fell and gone. So I think it's actually a resurrection.
After I thought about it, I would agree. I would agree. So my thoughts after really thinking about it is that, you know, that's the show's way of showing you Lanfear has the Dark One's favor, because at the end of this episode, when you talk about it more, you know, at least we haven't seen it yet, Ishmael is not resurrected. So
yeah.
Does Lanfear have the Dark One's favor in a Nablus sense? Like, you know, you're going to be exalted over Ishmael, or, you know?
I don't know. This is really getting quite advanced. I honestly wonder. It is interesting, actually, now that you mentioned that Ishmael is almost, let's say, allowed to die as opposed to being resurrected, because he was always the one that wanted to die and never was allowed to. I don't ever think. I don't know.
He wasn't even really imprisoned all the way. So
this is a very put this in the theory bank and let's revisit it in the next season. Why don't we? But this is something that can play out.
I always probably have too many theories for my own good, so.
Yeah. No, but it's a good one, but I think it's something we need to wait a long time to play out, so we probably just need to keep it on the bank and then test it later.
Justin has a very full theory bank.
I'm a stoner, man. I just sit around and think of shit.
That's good. That's what the series actually, you know, it lends itself to.
I really wish we got more of Pod and Fane. I really hope he gets to be a part of things going forward, either with them in the Waste or wherever they're, you know, Camelin or Karin, wherever the city is.
He was really wasted this season. I don't know. There's a really weird thing, by the way.
He's just so good.
Yeah. There's a really weird thing the show does, and once you notice it, you can't unnotice it, and it happened in season one, but also in season two, is people just walking into the scene from stage left, like with no apparent introduction, right? It's extremely noticeable.
Yeah, when he walks up, that must be like Rafe Judkins, one of his favorite things, because one of my favorite scenes is when, you know, it's coming up with Ponfaney, just comes sauntering in with the horn, and it's just like,
yep,
dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, and it's just like, it's silly, but it's also super gangster.
I don't understand the direction. It is kind of gangster if you want to interpret it that way, I think. Especially that he's like completely unfazed by all these Seanchan around him and like doesn't give a flying F about what's going on. But he's clearly on his own team, right? He's clearly on his own team and completely fearless, or you could say insane. But then in the finale, he seems very put together again, you know? So it's a bit weird. Like if he was going to be a bit mental, then really go with it. Because in the finale, he's talking to Ishmael, like he's really thinking strategically about what Lanfear is up to and so on. And suddenly very composed, which seems a bit weird.
Well, it's like he's working for the Dark One again, and he goes off of that path pretty quickly in the books, and he's kind of, you know, sort of working for the Dark One, but mostly doing his own thing. So,
yeah.
What did you think about the Damani and the collar effects and, you know, when they put it on, the shaking and how Egwene, you know, all that? What do you think of all that?
Let's go collar first, acting second. Collar, not a fan. Don't like the Iron Man nanotech, you know, color materializing type of thing.
You don't like the mechanics of it?
No, I prefer just a normal latch and like maybe some magical, you know, visual effect and the, you know, the blending of the seams, and it almost looks seamless after it has been put on. But I want there to be a latch mechanism, number one.
Maybe like the leash effect a little bit.
I would have liked the leashes.
There's no latch in the book, though, is there? It's a seamless.
There is. It's seamless, but there is a latch. You somehow need to find it.
Okay.
It's quite
Yeah, it's got like a little like seam type thing.
But the acting was amazing. Yeah, I think when it gets put on Egwene and the amount of the visual and physical acting you need to show that you're being very restricted by the device I don't even know. It's inconceivable to me. That episode 6 sort of level of acting was crazy, because that can look goofy as hell if you don't do it well. It really can. And the fact is, she pulled it off very well, very convincingly. And you could sense, like, invisibly, without any, you know, physical impediment in a way, you could feel like she was leashed. Couldn't touch the bracelet. She couldn't pick up the jug. She was thrown around. She fell to the floor, etc. And it all seemed very real.
I'm so glad to hear you talk about, like, you mentioned the nanotech. Like, that always... Even, you know, eventually in the Marvel movies, you have to just let it go and accept that it's a thing. But that's always an issue I have with future things. Like, I can accept a lot, but when things appear as if from no, or grow as if from nowhere, I'm just like, okay, that has to come from somewhere. Like, that material has to exist somewhere before it just grows around your body.
Yeah. Atoms just don't spontaneously, like...
Psh. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, God. I have so many questions. I'm just trying to think of something that... Oh, what do you think about Leandrin's kind of son plotline?
Cut it out completely from the edit. He doesn't exist in the edit. okay. No, so look, let's give due where it's due, right? It was really well done, very well acted, humanizes Leandrin and so on. And it's completely bloody irrelevant to the plot of the season. It just feels like it was there to humanize her in the end. And then, you know, ultimately, what comes out of it besides humanizing Leandrin? Like, does it have any longer consequences than that, right? Other than to humanize her and characterize that Aes Sedai live longer than the normal population.
Yeah, that's all I got from it. So,
which we already got from Moraine and his sister, right? So they, it's you don't have to show us something twice. It's like sort of what's the word? It's very redundant narratively speaking.
Right, they're beating you over the head with certain things, and they're so subtle with other things. I don't really understand. And I mean, I'm not overly complaining. I just sometimes go ahead.
No, it's like they beat you over the head with the stuff that isn't ultimately plot relevant, it's character relevant, which is good, but you should always try and do more than one thing with the plot line or with the scene that you're writing, right? You cannot just have this thing in a bubble to give character development to Leandrin, and then it has no further implication on the plot. Because now the guy is dead, and what? She's more committed to the dark than she was before because she realizes how deep in she is. How does it actually affect the
That was going to be my only other thing to add to what you said is that, you know, now she has no, like you said, that her last kind of like thread to being a decent person was, you know, her dying son. That was the only other thing I can, when you were kind of like, what's the other reason? That's the only thing I come up with.
But narratively speaking, why does that matter? I mean, why does it matter to the plot that she's not, that she's now more dedicated than she was? It doesn't, exactly. And so much screen time, I would say, wasted on developing this plot. And it's just nothing there. I don't know. I don't like these side tangents.
Yeah, I'm going to channel my inner cousin and agree with you 100%. That's one of his biggest issues. He's just like, you know, our main characters are Perrin, Matt, Rand, Egwene, and Nynaeve. And we spend a lot of time on these side characters. And like, as long as it pays off, even if I was saying to Dez, even if in a little way, like the Oathrod and Suwan kind of compelling Moraine and showing their relationship fracture. Also, I want to get back to the Elida arc with her. My next question to you is about the amount of time they spend with Moraine's sister and Barthanas. Because I have a theory, but I want to hear yours first.
Yeah, so the prevailing theory is that Moraine's sister takes the place of Colavir, which is Moraine's cousin, I think, in the books. There's more narrative to be extracted from that character.
Colavir was a dark friend? Yes, sir.
Oh, gosh, I can't remember.
Colavir was a dark friend? Yes.
Isn't she the one that Yes, and then Rand exiled her and then stripped her of a title and then he couldn't face the shame, right? And we know how that ended.
Oh, right. She, like, died in the dungeons or something. Anyways, sorry, go ahead.
No, so I think it's, again, this thing about developing side characters and so on to what purpose you ask. Because in the end, how much of that is really, really plot relevant, right? You can say, yes, it's character relevant and, you know, her sister's being set up for a bigger role to take the place of this other character that is in the book and so on and so forth. And it's well written and well acted as a period drama, right? Like as a bit of a microcosm on its own. But I think that's the biggest problem. It is a little bit of a microcosm.
Des, pause it for a second.
Check the tower!
It doesn't sit with the rest of the show or the season. Like narratively, it's a diversion for Moraine. I don't think there's anything substantial much going to come out of it. Then I just don't know where it's going to go. It feels like it was added for the sake of adding this, you know, family drama angle, sitting up for Anbir for something more later, revealing Barthanas as a doctrine. But why? Like, what does this achieve in the narrative?
Exactly. Some of the things that...
A bit of a puzzle to me. I think this is book knowledge coming in, that because I know that there's only marginal contribution that this plot line can make to the show and to the, you know, the final arc.
Right. It was a marginal plot line in the books. Why would it be so much more substantial now when we have less time?
This is it. It's always a trade-off of time, right? And like you say, our main protagonists haven't got the right development. I mean, 2 seasons of Perrin walking, right? 2 entire seasons of him walking is insane. It's absolutely insane.
I will say this. Perrin's acting and character in general was much better this season. Also, I do like how they made Loial much more of a, you know, much more Ogier-ish. You know, he didn't seem like he was...
Loial jacked up between seasons, yeah?
Yeah, he grew about 4 feet. It's pretty awesome. Well, and like, you know, the fighting with the Shan Chan and him just, you know, picking people up and chucking them. Like, I feel like that's appropriate. That's how an Ogier would work out in battle. So I loved all of that. So the Moraine stuff and everything. And like, I know you kind of keep up with stuff online and everything. Oh, let's see. Where do I want to go? Here's a theory. So we know we're going to get Shora. I don't know how to say her last name. And I think she's probably going to be Elida. Would you agree or no?
No, I don't think she's going to be Elida. I think her plot line of getting declared is going to be for Elida, like he later liked Deason because of what she's done until now. The problem that I have with that is, then what do you do with Elida, right? And what is her role ultimately? And how is that going to be different to Swan?
That's what I was going to ask, because I feel like your comment about Swan maybe, you know, kind of taking some of Elida's arc. What if, you know, Elida kind of tries to come up, Swan slaps her down, and then just takes over that arc? But I feel like Swan still has to be, you know, go through what she has to go through too.
It depends. Her arc could end next season, right?
Right, exactly. You know what Desmond was saying? He thinks that, and I kind of thought this too, and like him saying it made kind of he thinks that Moraine may kill Swan. You don't think so?
No,
no way. No chance in hell?
No. No chance in hell. I think because ultimately they had their break now in this season, which they very viscerally showed us in episode 7. And so the natural sort of resolution of that arc is that they finally make up at the end, and then Swan gets killed. And then it's more tragic for Moraine, right?
Right. Maybe gets killed by someone else, and then it's harder for her.
And I think she gets killed in the same plot line as the books where she got killed. So instead of killing her, they end up killing her. She's killed in the pool, basically.
Oh, you think they will steal her?
In the pool.
You think they will steal her and she will not live through it, is what you're saying?
Yeah, either that or she'll die somehow in the battle itself.
Okay. I want to stick with this one. I'm trying to not ADD out right now. Next question. So you know that there are some sisters. I'm going to try to keep this. I'm sorry. It's been a long week. I'm going to try to keep this non-spoilery. We know there are some sisters in the books who are Black Aja. Some we have met, some we have not met, right? As far as our book characters translating straight to the screen. Do you think they are going to juggle which... I mean, I think Varen's character arc is probably going to stay the same. Maybe slightly different motivations here and there, but I think... she'll be the same. Do you think they're going to play with any of the other Black Aja sisters who maybe weren't Black Aja that maybe will be Black Aja, such as Suan, Leanne, someone else that may not be Black Aja that was in the books?
So depends a bit how you interpret the question and depends a bit how you interpret what they do on the scene. I do think they will condense the number of Aes Sedai in total. Now that means they'll merge a few of the Black Aja sisters as well as our main protagonist, right? There's a reason why Leanne is getting so much screen time. It's probably because she's been given a bigger role than the book character, and likely is going to merge with other Red Sisters' roles, you know, throughout the series. Now, when it comes to the Black Aja sisters, I think, A, there'll be less of them, simply because you need to reduce the character now. And I think they'll combine a few of them into the same character, and, you know, that remains to be seen. I don't think they'll strictly change or make one of our main, let's say, light characters suddenly appear to be Black Aja. I think they'll have the normal Black Aja characters, or they'll make up new ones which are the combination of football others. If that answers the question.
So no chance that Suan or Leanne are Black Aja in your mind?
I give Swan no chance. I give Leanne a very mild chance.
Or okay,
maybe 10%.
Part B. Could either one of them be compulsed to be Black Aja seeming?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think that question has a lot more leeway. So I'll give that 20% on
right.
Leanne and maybe 20% on Swan, because Swan's action is seem a bit weird or inconsistent.
Well, and Leanne kind of gave up for someone who's the keeper and supposed to be pretty stoic and like steadfast. She was like, okay, Varen, take the shield. And Varen's answer was pretty fucking weak sauce. So
it did seem like an Aes Sedai should know how another Aes Sedai speaks between the lines. So at the same time, it's making Varen seem clever, but also making Leanne seem dumb.
Right. Oh, also, like when you see Varen reading from the book, like, oh, like, because Varen, one of the things I do love about Varen, and like, you know, please feel free to agree or disagree, she's not as kind of like ditzy seeming in the show as she is in the books, but she is as, I don't know, unassuming maybe isn't the word I'm looking for. She gets people to talk before they realize they're talking. She'll kind of just, she's so just nonchalant about things. And
I think she's just very friendly and warm, right? And she just like flips things into conversation and be replying before you realize.
Yeah, you could tell people are saying things that they're kind of like, shit, I shouldn't have said that. I think Mira Sahal as Varen is awesome. Awesome.
I think she's good. I would, you know, I do miss the ditzy part because we know that's an act, right? So it's an act to disarm people around her. And I feel like they should have leaned into that at the beginning, especially for new viewers, right? Just show her as being this old ditzy brown, I said, nose in the books, not paying attention to the world around her. And then have the reveal that actually she's been watching and listening very closely all this time and manipulating people, even while they think she's just, completely ditzy. I think that would have been a very much stronger reveal. So I missed that part of the characterization. But the other part, the part that you said, where you see her actually doing her work in the proper fashion, I think that's done really well. And Mira sounds really good.
Her conversation with Rima as Shirim when she's reading about, that's what made me say this, is she goes, yeah, I was going to check on a couple of our promising novices. And so when they're doing their chores, well, yeah, but they're not. And then Shirim's kind of like, oh, and then starts reading from the book. Oh, apparently they went to Camelin. It's like, and Aes Sedai would, especially the mistress of Namuses, who's in charge of every new admittance to the tower, would never be so, especially with the three most powerful initiates in however long. Well, I don't know where they are, you know?
That was due to the prior compulsion, right? That Beren hints at later, that maybe Shirim didn't know where they were because she was compulsed not to know where they were or something like that.
Exactly. And who is compulsed? Or is she playing?
I don't know. By the way, the more you think of that scene, a little bit the weirder the analysis becomes now that I'm thinking about it. Because, go with me here, the hypothesis is that she was compelled to write down that they had left. Not to self know that they had actually left or believe that they had left, right? So that's one thing. She was compelled to write it down in the book.
Like, so she's compelled to just write it down and read that information, not to believe it.
Because when she reads it, she seems confused. Right? Like she doesn't remember writing it or that.
Right. Very, very confused.
Right. If that be the case, then what should she know about where they are? So she should think that they're in the tower because no one knows that Leandrin kidnapped them.
Right. But suddenly she is either saying but not believing they're on their way to Camelin.
Yeah. So she's saying they're on their way to Camelin. She's confused why it's written in the book because she doesn't remember writing it. And then she says to Beren, this is where they should be, I suppose. Something like that.
Yeah.
I think that tracks. I was trying to figure out which way the compulsion went.
Okay, Dez, sorry. Last thing, and then we can start again. I've had so many questions that I want to talk to this guy about. Last thing, going back to the Barthanas thing and the Elida / Camelin / Morghese, because Morghese is also going to be in next season, right?
Yeah, I think so. They did do a name drop as well in that Beren Tyrion scene, right? They went to with the keeper of Queen Morghese's guards.
And Dez, feel free if you want to take over this. One of Dez's theories is that when we've talked about this, my theory as well is that Barthanas, the queen, is he marrying the queen or is he marrying the princess? We were kind of debating about that.
He's marrying the queen, Queen Galdrian, that we had in.
Queen Galdrian. So marrying Queen Galdrian, any chance that Ravin and Morghese's arc storyline could be moved to Barthanas and a Forsaken we haven't met yet, who is Galdrian or is going to become Galdrian because Ishmael just let everyone out?
Wow. Absolutely never heard of this theory before. So this is an interesting one. My suspicion is that Barthanas is listening out due to the way it ends with him in season 2. But I think the theory is super interesting.
Sorry, I kind of couldn't hear you. Did you say Barthanas' arc ends season 2? Is that what you said? Or
I think so. Because of something that Anvia said, right? He says that he tells her when she's trapping him in the room. He tells her, please don't tell anyone. And she says, I already did.
Right.
And then you have this troop of guards coming to guard the room or to take him away or whatever. We're not left with the resolution there. So I believe she's told enough people that he's a doctrine that it wouldn't, that he would need to now be written out of the rest of the show because he's in prison or whatever his natural end would be.
Unless he was going to marry a Forsaken because they could kind of Men in Black mindfuck all that.
They could.
That was my only thought.
They could, but I think it introduces a power mechanic to the show that becomes troubling later, right? Which is, then why don't they do that all the time?
Right.
So there's some stuff you can get away with in books that you can't get away with on a TV show because people will follow the logic more easy. I think an author can get away with a few narrative tricks that a writer on screen can't.
So you're saying that if they edited it out all of Barthanas from season 2, it wouldn't bite you in the ass in later seasons.
Exactly, and I'm almost pretty much aimed to do that. I'm really looking to... So I've killed already the Leandrin son off. And by the way, there are only a few scenes to remove, and nothing changes about Leandrin's story at all in the rest of the season. So that's out. The other two arcs I'm going to substantially cut down is the Andy and Bothanis arc. You only need a few scenes with them where I need to sex with them, but nothing else. And the Lan, Wada, Alana, whatever nonsense those guys are up to. You can get away with so much of not actually showing any of that. It has very little to do with the plot. It's a very, 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 very convoluted way to get them all to Carrion in the end. I mean, they could have just gone there. There was no reason at all for this whole... I don't even want to talk about it. It's annoying.
Okay. I think we can unpause, Des. What's your time stamp, brother?
23:26.
Okay, cool. Go.
Nabir Tahir!
Man. I love it. I expected Egwene to do more damage because there's so many people down there that she would have no problem. You know, the White Cloaks. I know she sends a couple fireballs down to the White Cloaks, but I was hoping to really see her just go ham on some White Cloaks. And
that's something that you actually pointed out, Des, that I didn't really get, that she decided, I can shoot an...
Oh, my God. So, Justin, just so you know, we can't pause anymore or we won't be done by 11 o'clock, but shit's about to get real. Shit's about to get real.
Jeremy's about to show up. So, it's going to get real. Editor, let's get the boxing gloves out, brother. We're going to beat this guy up. Welcome.
I welcome Jeremy.
Hello, editor.
Good day to you, sir.
Oh, we're right at that spot, huh?
Here we go. He's gonna Indiana Jones.
He's gonna Indiana Jones.
Hey, you know what's funny, Dr. Editor? Jeremy called this. I don't know, Jeremy, what episode was it? He was like, what if he just Indiana Joneses him and just ices him? And it's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
I don't even
I totally did.
I think it was before the trailer even came out. I think it was from a still shot.
I think you're right.
Absolutely. Des. It was from a still shot, 100%.
To be fair, I love Indiana Jones. Okay. And most of the things that, you know, happen in my life, I compare to Indiana Jones. So this was just a one in a million shot.
Yeah. Oh, Lan's brother committed seppuku. Shit. Oh, editor, damn it. We were talking about what if they've been what if they've been putting off the sword training on screen with Rand because he just can't hack a sword and he like keeps like hurting himself.
Oh gosh.
So we've been talking to the editor for a while now, and I think we've decided that his season 2 fan edit is gonna be about 45 minutes long.
Yeah.
What? So it's going to include like 6 minutes of what actually happens in the books. And then the rest of it is just going to be like, I'm going to try to recreate anything that sounds like some sort of semblance of good.
Yeah. I'm going to throw any Easter egg in I can just to please, book readers. Oh, Inktar's arc is so disappointing.
It is.
Catching up the editor. To me, I'm catching me up to the editor. Editor, what did you think of the season 2?
I was saying this at the start. I think on the screen, as a full season, stronger than season 1. But when I sit down to actually edit it, I struggle to find the film in there. Like, I struggle to find the narrative through line. It feels like all our protagonists are super passive. They're reactive to things that are happening around them. And really, the only people driving the story forward is the Forsaken. There's Lanfear and Ishamael. So you could say they are the protagonists of the season. They're the ones creating the narrative momentum. They're the ones driving the plot. And our characters are just reacting to them and falling in line. So it feels like, I don't know, it just feels like a bit of a disservice to all the characters, actually, on the side of the light. They just don't have that much agency.
God, I love you. I love you so much.
Thanks.
That's why I wanted him to be here for this episode.
I haven't seen Jeremy smile like this in 6 months.
The man's in tears.
I'm going to cry right now.
Jeremy, you're going to have to listen to this episode because the editor and like Desmond, I'm sorry, you've been quiet for 30 minutes, but I've been hitting the editor with stuff and we've been bantering some shit that, like, I know you'll appreciate, but, you know, maybe not want to get into. So, oh, Lanphier and Beldome and shit. I forgot about that. But we've been having some fun, man. So I'm glad you're fucking here, because I've been trying to channel you, though, about certain things. Like I said, not quite as bitter as my man over here, but some of the things that you, I know that you would be like, hey, this is a problem. I don't love this. Why is this happening?
No one could be as bitter as me.
Even when we were kids, you were bitter.
Okay, listen. Okay. I'm gonna lay it out on the line. This is where I'm coming from.
Desmond, you're gonna have to cut this out.
I don't even want season three to start. I want them to cancel it. I want it to go away, because I think in 10 years, then maybe they can actually find somebody who actually cares about this series, wants to see the books come to life, and would put the time and the effort into being like, I want to put these books on a screen. That is not what we're getting from this. Season two was not that way. And season three, listen,
what if you're wrong?
I don't want to destroy anybody's hopes and dreams. It's going to be the exact same. I'm sorry. You might see, I think you might see some things that are nods to the books, but that is not what I want to see. I want to see the books. I don't want to see the nods to the books. And that's me. You can have your own opinions. Everybody can have their own opinions. Totally fine. That's my opinion.
Two questions.
Those are some fighting words.
Yeah, let's get them, dude. Let's fucking get them.
They are fighting words.
Now, unfortunately, now, Jeremy, I don't...
Pause for a sec.
I don't think what you're saying is terrible. Like, I want to see season three. I want to see where this version is going. I can't, Jester. We do not have the time.
I hate you.
We don't have the time.
I'm so mad at you.
I know. You should be. But, like... The problem with your version, Jeremy, is someone has to believe in the show so much that they can finance 12 episodes before they even publish the pilot.
No, so here's where I disagree with you, Desmond. So I look at these episodes as the Ralph Bakshi episodes of Lord of the Rings or the Hobbit, the you know what I'm talking about? The animated versions of The Hobbit.
Yes, the Ralph Macchio.
Right, the Ralph Macchio versions of the Hobbit.
Yes.
Where people were like...
I've seen that.
They were like, these are kind of cool, but they're not great. And then you get somebody with a vision, like I was almost said Guillermo del Toro. It's not Guillermo del Toro. It's the New Zealand dude. What's his name? The guy who came up with the Hobbit. Thank you. Peter Jackson. Peter Jackson walks in and he says, I have an idea, and we can make these books into movies, and we can totally do it on the budget, and it might be, you know, blown out of proportion, but whatever, we're going to do it. And then he does it, and then wins Oscars, and wins, they make tons of money.
It also took the bet of a lifetime, right? New Line Studios.
Absolutely.
They bet the entire company on this. They would have gone bankrupt if it was a failure.
Exactly.
And no other studios in Hollywood would finance it, right? They were on the... There's a whole story about how they actually secured the financing and the studio to actually produce the films. So you need someone with a big vision and a big appetite for this to actually do it.
They got
to
pull a mat. They got to roll the dice. That's what they got to do. They really do. They got to roll the dice. And
do you want to see something amazing, Jeremy?
Please.
Watch the Atlas Shrugged trilogy.
Okay.
The first movie is got a budget. It's got actors you recognize. They go to locations. It's awesome.
It goes the opposite direction.
The second episode is like, oh, I think I saw him on an episode of X-Files once. And, oh, I don't recognize. Who is this guy? The third Atlas Shrugged is just fucking like.
Paper mache.
It's a bunch of people. And they recast everybody. Like, they literally could not pay the same actors to come back.
Really?
Everybody in every movie gets recasted, and the third one is a bunch of dipshits that have never acted before or since standing in front of a green screen just reading the script. It's fucking amazing.
So it's like the second season of Wheel of Time. Gotcha. All right.
But see, Jeremy, okay, here's the thing. And like, no, there are people like you who are hardcore book people that just really like, because when we first watched this episode, you were like, you said, I am a fool for a reunion, and I liked this episode. I think what you fight with, at least, okay, this is coming from my point of view. Like, okay, I'm half you and I'm half fucking psychopath fanboy. Because as much as you love Wheel of Time, like, I do love it more. Like, I know I have logged more time, and I know it's probably in some ways meant more about, maybe not more to my life, but my character, right?
I agree, yeah.
Like, of who I am as a person.
Absolutely.
That being said, like, you know, you're a purist, I'd say. You want to see straight across, as close as you can to, like, a Game of Thrones adaptation.
Absolutely.
What I hear from most people is that they really enjoy the show if they haven't read the books. And what I've been trying to do is remove myself from all the knowledge I have, keep my knowledge in a positive sense, so when something pops up that it makes sense and I can go, oh, and connect the dots in my head. Oh, that's super awesome. But what I keep just trying to tell myself is that, okay, this is a slightly different turning of the wheel. Things are going to be different. I was asking the editor about, I don't think I've talked to you about this yet. What if instead of Morghese and Raven, we get Barthanis and whoever he's marrying moving forward, and they're a Forsaken? Why would they need to marry him to have power in Kyrian?
Kyrian.
Maybe to get closer to Moraine. I don't know. It wouldn't make sense story-wise, but what if that's why there was so much exposition with the sister? So just little things, like, would it make a difference to you if those things, like how Suan had to use the Oathrod promise to compel Moraine to do what she wanted? If these things that you kind of don't love in the first two seasons come to fruition in the third or fourth season and you like it, would it change your mind? Or can you just not get past your love of the books and you cannot separate the show? And like, the show is good, I'll never love it as much as the books.
What would be the point of me separating the books from the show? The only reason I watch the show is because I love the books. What's the point of, they could just take any, just take a fantasy, anything, and make it into a show. I want to watch the show because I want to see the books that I loved come to life. What's the point?
I suppose I'm happy enough just seeing enough of the things from the book being brought to the screen that I love. I suppose I am enough of a pessimist in life to go into it knowing I'm not going to get every single thing I want. I'm not going to get half the things I want. But if I get some fan service that I love, it's better than not ever having it, right? As far as, that's the way I look at it.
We wouldn't have a show if it was just, oh, look, there's the books. We don't have a show.
We wouldn't have a show if Desmond didn't think this was about time travel.
I think that, yeah, absolutely. If nothing else, we have a show, and that's great. and literally, that's about the only positive thing I've taken away.
I almost believed him when he said that.
Desmond, it's like pulling teeth. Hey, editor, do you want to be the third wolf brother? We need to get fucking shit can this guy.
You could totally do that. You should probably do that.
Never. I mean, not that I don't want the editor to be a regular part of the show, but Jeremy isn't going anywhere. Sorry, Jeremy.
Oh, dude, Jeremy, I was gassing you up today. I'm so glad you showed up.
You need the controversy to drive up views, right? So,
yeah, I don't know about that.
Well, I'm just going to say it eventually. Just for the record, Egwene's bad as fuck. She just shoved a fucking collar on Rena's neck.
That where we're at?
I don't know how this works also, by the way. But yeah, let's talk about that. But I want to say, editor,
I don't like how the metaphysics of that works. It's just wrong on every level. I don't like it.
I agree with you.
I almost feel like it would be like that never-ending loop, and they're almost trying to set it up from Pevara and Andril towards the end. You know, how they're just kind of like constantly feeling each other out. I don't think it would work this way. I want to say, Desmond.
The thing is, if you're a show watcher only.
No, please go ahead.
No, you're good, bro. Please go ahead.
Now, I was going to say that if you're a show watcher and you don't know the 100% the rules of the magic system, it comes across as, okay, generic magic system. One of them stronger with the collar than the other, I guess. No, not super duper established. So it just makes it makes everything feel less than. You know, it's a bit simpler. It's a bit less. Like, now she's channeling without being allowed to channel, even though she's wearing the collar, you know. So you just sort of, okay, I guess that works. Fine. It's good on screen. But you're not left with any sense of, okay, this is how it actually, you know, the magic system works, how these collars were supposed to work, etc. It throws a bit. It goes even against a bit episode 6, right? Like, they spend all this time.
Right. It goes against the book mechanics as well, right? But the way I took it show-wise is like, Egwene is more powerful than Rena, so she could, that's the only thing that she could do to work it out.
Yeah.
She can't attack her. She can't take her collar off. She's more powerful, or she can put her, like, basically demote Rena to her level and then...
Yeah, I don't know.
She's wearing the collar. I mean, it honestly, to me, like, magic-wise, or it should just kill them both.
She couldn't even pick up the jug, right? How could she pick up the collar to put it on her?
Exactly.
She couldn't put her mouth to the cup.
Why would you establish the rules so strong?
With her hands behind her back.
You dedicate an entire episode 6 to establishing this rule, this one rule, that she can't do what the Suldam doesn't want her to do without her permission. And...
Right.
Then you break it 2 episodes later for the sake of the scene. There were other ways to write it, right? They didn't have to make this narrative choice to get to the end of the scene.
But they also did that the first season, right? Wherein Tom Marilyn is telling Matt about how, you know, the Aiel wasn't dangerous because he didn't have his veil up. And then the next episode, or maybe 2 episodes later, they show Rand's mom killing everybody with her veil down.
Was it the next episode, or was it like the beginning of that episode? I think it was the next episode, but you're right.
No, it was episode 7.
we'll defer to the editor. He's watched it more than we have, trust me. Well, how about this?
Jeremy, honestly, bro, when you listen to this episode, you're going to be fucking proud of me. Ask Desmond.
Good. I'm already proud of you.
I've been shitting on this fucking thing. Not shitting on it. I've just been picking apart things that I... It's not even that I don't like it. Because like I said, if I'm able to compartmentalize enough to where I can go like, I love what I get to see. I'm enjoying the things that are new. It's okay with me. It's just a slightly different story than what I'm used to. And that's okay, because I literally love the... It's like loving Star Wars. Like Mandalorian first season, great. Second season, third season, I couldn't finish it. But I still love Star Wars stuff because I love the universe, right?
Well, and
I love the Wheel of Time universe enough to where I want more of it no matter how I can get it.
And Justin, I'm happy with you when you want to tie yourself in knots trying to like just, you know, stand up for these guys. And I'm totally fine with that. I'm never going to do that.
I know.
I'm happy that you do that, because that offsets my horrible negativity with this terrible show. And it's good that you stand up and say, no, I think they have a vision. And there's times when you're right. And there's times when I'm right. And that's totally okay.
Take the books away. Is it a well-done show?
No.
Aside from story, like, you don't think the story is good? You don't think the sets?
No.
I would never watch it.
No. No.
No, I would never watch it.
You don't think it's acted well or written well, anything like that?
I haven't watched Willow. I haven't watched Shadow and Bone.
Same with me.
I haven't watched Legend of the Seeker. I wouldn't have watched Wheel of Time if I didn't read it.
Okay. Can I ask you a question?
Did you say Legend of the Seeker? Did I just hear Legend of the Seeker?
Mr. Editor, have you read any of the Sword of Truth books?
No.
Okay. We did. Justin and I did. I read all of them, actually.
What one did you quit on, Jeremy? How many were there and what one did you...
I finished them all.
How many were there? I think I quit on like 5.
Like 10, probably 8 to 10. Yeah, there's a lot of books. Yeah, yeah. And they're not good. Like the last 6 or 7 of them, they're not good. But yes, this show, I would have stopped watching it. I would, and it would have broke my heart, honestly. I would have just been like, no, this show is terrible. And it breaks my heart to watch this show.
You know, I'd be more mad at you if that wasn't like, at first I was more upset with you because most of the people who kind of had that attitude after the first season were what we call book quotes. And they're just, I don't know. I'm kind of angry right now. I don't even know where to go with it. I'm not as mad. I'm not as mad as you about your negativity as I used to be, because I understand it's not coming from a place of like just ignorant fucking dumb hate. Not that I'm that's coming off wrong. I don't want to say that that's who you are. I mean, like, as opposed to just not trying to look deeper and like, because there are plenty of nods to the show and to the books, and there are deeper nods if you look at things. And editor, being on Twitter, I know that Jeremy's not on Twitter at all. He's not really on social media. Being on Twitter, I know that people point out a lot of small nods to the book and little things that are nuanced that are awesome. But no one but who was a major crazy book nerd would get it but us. So it kind of doesn't matter for the show if we don't like it.
I don't want to see nods to the book.
Does that make sense?
I want to see the book.
Right.
That's where I come from.
Just give me a full scene every now and again, and I'm going to be stoked.
Not even that. I just cut out the superfluous stuff. You don't have to add anything.
Yes.
You don't have to add anything.
Yeah. You don't have.
I don't need to see Moraine's sister.
That's the thing. When it comes to literature, nope. When it comes to literature, there's no more words ever been written down in one story, I don't think, than the Wheel of Time.
Exactly.
You absolutely do not need to add anything. Tweak stuff, subtract stuff, combine stuff, all that. Don't add shit. It's not necessary.
Yeah. And I, so Desmond, to answer your Atlas Shrugged question, I think that if they went back and they actually did the first book and the second book the way that they're written, and they're very low, you could do it very low budget. If they did that, you can build an audience. Because you did it with building characters.
No.
Sorry. I'm talking over the wolf killed.
No, I can't watch it. My boy's dying right now. I'm going to cry.
I'm sorry, Hopper.
Sorry, I'm a little drunk, guys. And I'm tired.
Oh, Hopper.
Yeah, sorry, Hopper.
You don't even understand. Editor, like, I'm going to point my camera at him.
Perrin's mouth is open.
I have a dog who looks like a dark version of Hopper.
Oh, sweet.
And so I'm a dog guy. So, and that was one of my favorite. Oh no, I'm going to cry. Fuck this shit.
But Hopper, it's kind of like,
it's just a TV show.
Justin knows that the dog dies and he still gets upset.
Moment of silence for the fucking best boy ever.
But it's kind of like Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like if he doesn't die, Hopper doesn't reach his full potential. So like we have to do this. Otherwise Hopper isn't Hopper.
True.
Yeah, I know. I know. If Hopper doesn't die, then Perrin doesn't fucking rage out and fucking kill Dane's dad.
Oh, legit.
Yeah.
Like murders him.
Oh, Matt.
Eat shit.
Matt, use your, you know what I, you know what Jeremy does love though is the lightsaber.
Oh, love it.
Dagger.
I was going to say, next question, editor, what do you think about the lightsaber Ashendari bullshit? I want to pull my hair out over this shit. It better not be the actual Ashendari. I'm going to fucking kill myself.
I made a very small cut. It's not even that much of a cut. You only have to snip out the scene where he pushes the Ashendari.
You photoshopped the lightsaber in his hands?
No.
Yes. Oh, sorry.
No, it's actually even simpler. There's like only 5 seconds of the shot where he's pushing the Ashendari into the door handle. If you cut that out, then it's just opening the door handle from the inside because you're on the shot in the outside of Padden Fane in the passage. So it just appears...
Padden Fane just left the door
unlocked. Door's locked from the inside. Makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. But it also makes sense that he left the door unlocked because he is absolutely full faith that Matt's going to fall prey to the dagger. And he's sitting outside the passage waiting for him to come out. What's the reason to lock the door at all?
Amen.
Yeah?
You're a genius.
So there's no lightsaber. There's still a...
You should be hired.
There's still a knife tied to a stick, which fundamentally, I don't know, through some black magic stays tied to the damn stick throughout the whole battle. But, you know, not much you can do with that.
And I didn't know that Khal Drogo was a hero of the horn. Did you see that?
Khal Drogo? Well, I said Aquaman. So he summoned the Justice League. That was my joke.
That's true. What do you think about Matt being a hero of the horn, Doctor?
Oh, the horn. Where does the horn go?
Why did she take the horn? That's what I don't know.
It's gone.
Yeah, like, what does she do with the horn?
Are they going to have to hunt the fucking horn again? Like, once you blow the horn, does it get hit again?
Well, no.
Oh, shit.
It shouldn't.
Well, not generally, but maybe.
Don't tell me about what the book said.
Yeah, well, like, listen, in the book, oh, never mind. This is a TV show. It has nothing to do with the book.
So you didn't really get, like, fucking, like, chills on your neck or hard nipples when he says time to roll the dice?
He doesn't say that. He says it in the old tongue and they don't translate it.
Who cares?
Oh, okay.
You know what it means? It didn't like tickle your balls even a little bit?
Not even a little bit. It looks so low res.
How are we related?
I don't know. Sometimes I wonder.
How are you the person that showed me this amazing thing?
Hey, Justin, let's leave that stone right where it is.
So 10 minutes later, Perrin is still killing Jeffrey.
Yeah, seriously. He like hit him in the stomach while he's standing up, and then he's like chopping
your new
him.
Best friend, Dane, doesn't want to have lunch with you anymore. Hold me back, bro. Hold me back, bro. Hold me back, bro.
Two rivers.
I'm going to come fucking find you next season.
Here, take this shield. Become Captain America.
Take this amazing Captain America shield. I hate this so much. Editor, what do you think about Uno being a hero of the horn, my man?
Exactly.
I loved it. Because what if he's Gaidel Kane?
No, he is. He is. I think Rafe said that they put that in. Because you see when he hands the...
Okay, cool.
When he hands the shield to Perrin, then he has two swords, right? Which is Gaidel Kane's sort of characteristic besides being, you know, ugly. But...
It's been ugly.
I don't like it because it means we have to kill Uno to get it. So not a big fan of the change because I think he brings a lot of levity. He brings a lot of levity and humor to the scene. So he could have he could have been that guy, right? The one you put in the scene to kind of be cracking the jokes and so on, while the other Shinarans are very stern and so on.
Well, that's what he's always been.
Yeah, and now he's gone. So what happens next? Like, well, I don't know. He plays.
Uno died. Massima got Guyliner. You know, Ingtar got Guyliner. Massima got obsessed with Rand's. All kinds. It's all
Lan's going to be happy that he's re-merged with Moraine, and he's going to become the wisecracking sidekick next season.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very in character for him, right? Cracking jokes, being talkative.
Yeah, not just whispering.
Whispering.
Ran, you can't leave Karin. I'm so sad.
This bugs me too. So right here, Matt throws the spear, and that's not what Min saw.
Through the illusion of Ishmael.
But that's not what Min saw.
That was his plan all along.
Oh.
Min saw him walking up and stabbing him.
It's a version of what Min saw, though, right? I mean, like, dagger went into Rand's flesh.
Okay.
He was penetrated.
Editor, have you ever seen the movie Role Models?
I have not.
Oh, well, we're going to be talking about that next week, so you should...
come back next week.
Enjoy that.
I want to have you on a Patreon so bad.
That's not
though.
Even a Patreon. That's a regular episode. That's just getting rid of some energy.
Amen.
At the end of the year. We're going to do RoboCop for Patreon and then Role Models just so we can just give Jeremy something to get excited about.
Oh, thank God.
And Jeremy can show us his whispering eye.
Editor, what do you think? So you're going to see pretty soon when Rand stabs Ishmael.
Yeah.
Right? He's going to stab him through the heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. They destroyed the continuity of this, obviously, with Lanfear. What do you think about that?
We talked about this a little bit, actually. Just we were talking about like not having the Dark One's favor, right?
Yeah.
Do you believe that too?
I don't even know what. So, I mean, I think the finale is a whole mix of things that sort of had to happen because it's a finale and that's what needs to happen on the screen.
Sure.
Without actually being properly set up in advance, right? So it just feels like a bit of a weak source, like things are just happening and there are certain things that need to be shown that are shown without really being earned. One of that is this Eren brand on Rand's hand.
Yeah.
Because he does this very strange grip on the sword because that needs to happen and it didn't have the sword on the hilt, the Eren on the hilt. I don't know why they just didn't do that. That's number one. And then number two, the fact that Ishmael just sort of stands there. It looks visually extremely unclimactic.
Yes.
I know he wants to die, but the visual and writing choices to convey that, like to convey what's happening in the scene is just very weak. So it looks like he's just standing there, Rand's just slow walking a sword into him, and that's the end of it. And he dies and doesn't get resurrected.
Yeah.
For reasons. You know, why? Who knows?
Well, not yet anyway. I mean, what if season 3 starts with him getting resurrected?
I mean, but he blew away into dust, like he Thanos snapped out of there, so I don't know.
But they have talked about how there is going to be more than, you know, whatever certain amount of Forsaken. So do you think we're going to get another iteration of Ishmael or Moradin or...
If we see a Billy Zane cameo.
fingers crossed,
you're
man.
A genius, sir. You are a genius.
Like, it's like Ishmael wanted to die right here.
Maybe the closing shot of season three is just Billy Zane walking into frame.
Oh my God. I would lose my mind.
Everyone starts speculating.
I would literally be like, I don't care how bad this show is, and it's bad, but I don't care how bad it is. It just, like, I just made something come to life on television.
I manifested something. Do you think Ishmael wanted to die here? Like, his whole point was to die?
No.
No?
I don't. No.
Well, no, I'm saying like he was either turn Rand to the dark or die.
I think he says something to Perrin Fain in the corridor when they were talking about Lanthea betraying them or something. And he says like, I'll turn him now or in the next life or something like that. So I think his sort of backup plan is just giving up this cycle and like allowing himself to be killed.
Yeah, basically like all my plans failed. I'll try next time.
But I don't think the episode does enough to convey that properly. I mean, it's one conversation with Padden Fane in the passage when they're talking more about Lanfear betraying, like it's a line in passing that you're supposed to catch. And then I don't know. If that's what they were going for, it should have been sold more strongly and it should have been telegraphed to the audience that this guy was either gonna turn Rand or he was going to allow himself to be killed. Like that should have been the clear choice. And there should have been the moment of temptation for Rand to turn. that you feel, oh no, you know, our hero is going to give in?
There was none. There was zero.
There was none. So there's a waste of tension in the scene. Literally waste of tension in the scene. Because he's not trying to kill Rand. 100% clear. Been established very strongly in the show. So where's the tension in that scene? What is going on?
I think, too, if they would have had Nynaeve actually be able to try to heal Matt or Rand right here, it would have given him more of a... It would have understood more of how bad that wound that he took is. Instead, they had Elaine do it.
Right, because in the books, Elaine's not exactly a healer, so for her to just jump in like that. But also, we've already fucking shit on that mechanic because Egwene healed Nynaeve from basic crispy critterness. So also, a lot of people kind of lost their mind on social media about two things. And editor, I know you can probably have an opinion to back me up on this. One, how far away she was when she was channeling at the ships, which I don't have a problem with. If you can see it, you can fucking hit it as far as I'm concerned. Number two,
the three O's.
Why was it okay for her to destroy those? Right. Why was it okay for her to break the three O's to destroy those ships? Because they already got attacked by Shanshan. My thought was that they got attacked by the Shanshan on the beach. So they're allied with the Shanshan. They already threatened my life. I can attack them.
Nah.
But that's not, but hang on a second. That's not what the dialogue conveys. And this is the problem. If that's what they wanted to go for, as tenuous as that reasoning is, and it's extremely tenuous to start with, then where is the shot of Moraine's face seeing the soldiers charging at them and she feels like she's imminently about to be killed, looking around in panic, seeing the ships, feeling as if they, you know, that she's in danger and then reacting to go and blast them, right?
Well, Lan's killing all those guys while she's channeling. Is that not enough?
No.
No, because visually, you need to convey that. There needs to be concern on her face. You need to convey that she feels that she's in the last defense of her life, right? Because that's what the oath says and that's what they said in episode 2 of season 1. Now, what they do is it's the worst setup for this possible because...
Wait, he's about to kneel.
He says... I don't care if there's 1,000 innocent people on that ship.
Right, right.
You know, I'm prepared to kill them. Like, how do you write that line of dialogue and, like, somehow square that away with the third oath? Like, how? How is that a line of dialogue that makes it into the show?
It's just you do what Obi-Wan says. It's from a certain point of view.
Oh, no. Justin, come on.
No, but that's not what the show establishes.
Because... Because a lot of the things that the Aes Sedai do is that they can...
You can deconstruct...
Tell a lie if they believe it's the truth. They can tell a lie if they believe it's the truth.
Yeah.
Justin, let him talk.
You know, you can convince yourself that... Sorry.
No, it's fine. No, I agree with you. But you can deconstruct something after you first construct it to show us how it works. And they haven't shown us that they're unable to attack. Unless they're in the last defense of their life. And they haven't shown us that she feels justified that she's in the last defense of her life. So the way to do this, the way to attack the ships at a distance and so on, is to make us believe that she feels she's in the last defense of her life. And they didn't do that. They literally didn't show a sense of panic on her face. They didn't show the soldiers closing in. Maybe the arrow guy that shot her from the clifftops, you know, shoots close to her or something, right?
An arrow hits in the sand by her, something.
Show maybe one of the ships turning or you know, they're starting to channel towards them or something. Like, show them being in danger, even if it's the smallest amount of danger. But show us that Moraine.
Yeah, it wouldn't take a lot, right? A little bit.
It wouldn't take a lot. It would take us to show that it doesn't matter. Like, yes, I do. But the trick is, the Aes Sedai has to believe that she's in imminent danger.
Right.
It doesn't mean that she actually has to be in imminent danger. So the way to convey this is, the ships are actually far away. Land landing the soldiers. But you show the level of panic or stress on Moraine's face to make us believe that she believes she's in mortal danger. And then she can do whatever the hell she wants. And then you convey the sort of the spirit of the third oath very, very clearly.
Yeah, the imminent danger that would cause you to be able to...
As opposed to what the words actually say. Yeah.
To do what you need to do without breaking the oath.
Exactly.
They could even show a couple of Damani and Soldam kind of turn towards her and be like, what's that? And she can, you know, sense that they're going to start channeling at her, even like, oh, exactly. Something on her face. It could be very subtle. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
But like I said, when I say from a certain point of view, like what you said, it has to matter that the Aes Sedai feels in danger. And, you know, that could matter on some person's personality and constitution as well.
But then allow the audience to see that, because we don't see it.
Right. They did not.
We don't see that she believed. Exactly.
I agree. Ooh, what do you think of Mogadin, dude?
Awesome introduction. really, really awesome. Like in one short scene, basically steals the show. You know, steals the whole season in one short scene.
Do you think she looks like Bjork?
Just creepy as fuck.
Like Bjork? A little bit.
Yes.
Even the mannerisms, even the voice, right?
Right?
Yeah. I've tweeted that. I think you've actually commented on one of my tweets that said it too. Like, this is fucking Bjork, 100%. This is a trip too, because Lanfear is, I don't want to say afraid of Mugidin, but caught off guard maybe, because she kind of walked into a trap.
Yeah, I would say afraid in that moment.
Right.
But not in general. In that moment, she did walk into the trap, so she knows she is actually in danger right there.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, because Lanfear doesn't realize that she's been freed, right, until that moment, because Ishmael freed everybody, like, right before all this went down.
Yep, exactly.
Dude, she's creepy as fuck. She's, like, smelling her. Oh, my God. A little counterintuitive to the books, though, like, right, Jeremy? Like, Mugidin would never do this in the books. This is not the character.
Oh, the TV show has nothing to do with the books.
I know, but it's juxtaposition. It's talking points, right?
True.
I'm not mad at it. I think it's cool. Mugidin always annoyed me in the books because she was just such a spineless fuck. I mean, I'm just saying, like, I get it. Each Forsaken is supposed to have their kind of specific nuances and personalities, but I don't particularly picture them being super afraid of one another. Cautious, wary, yes. Afraid? Probably not.
Yeah.
Oh, I just love how they just show in a short minute just how much more powerful she is than Lanfear.
She's not.
All right. Well, I have 3 hours of material to edit, so...
I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. So I got to wrap this up. Editor, thank you so much. If not sooner, you know, whenever you have your first, you know, assuming you find the spirit to finish your fan edit for season 2, we would love to watch it and get you on and talk about it. And Jeremy, you can, you know, Jeremy may not like this show, but maybe he'll like your show. And
I like this show that we're on right now.
Yeah.
If anything, it will be at least shorter, right? So less this long.
30-minute fan edit.
And thank you so much, yeah. Jeremy, for showing up too. I know you're.
Oh, no.
You had a busy night. It's a Friday night, and thanks for squeezing us in. You definitely.
It was great.
Turned this into a conversation.
I had a great night.
Wish you could have been here for the whole thing, because we had some good shit going on, but it's all right.
Listen, buddy, it's my daughter only turns 21 once, and we're having like a great time. And yeah, she turned 21. And so
that's very cool.
We had a great night, had dinner for her, and we watched.
Happy birthday, Genevieve.
We watched Love Actually for Christmas. That's what we do every year. And I cried like a baby.
Oh,
I cry like a baby at the end every single time. I don't cry at TV shows, and I'm definitely not going to cry at the Wheel of Time, other than it breaks my heart.
I was going to say, but you do, but for all the wrong reasons.
But all
you cry all every fucking week that we record. Don't lie.
But I cry at the end of the Love
I episode. Hope your daughter will be more positive when we have her. Ooh, I'm just kidding.
She's my daughter. So.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no. We could have my son on, but he probably wouldn't talk. He'd be like, no.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right.
My water is your water.
Cheers, guys.
May you always find water and shade. Editor, thanks for showing up, man.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to tweet you my actual just like phone number, bro. And honestly, if you want to come on any Patreons,
sure.
If you are interested in coming on in any future episodes, I'll, you know, just shoot me a text, man. I'll let you know what we're going to talk about. And we'll, you know, if we can, we'll plan around you and make it happen, dude, because our conversations are always better when you're here. Thank you for showing up. I really appreciate you making the time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thanks for the invite. No, it's always a pleasure to be on and great to chat.
Yeah, always.
Dude, you're always welcome. You always make it better. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And for my Time Pop crowd, I just want to remind everybody that the editor is coming to us from the future. He is living tomorrow morning, and
it's Friday night. He's in Saturday morning. Boom.
That's right.
Bye.
Bye, y'all.
May you always find water and shade, guys. Love y'all. Bye bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Thank the Light, the Wheel of Time podcast. Please like, subscribe, and tell a friend about Thank the Light. And please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thankthelight. We have and will continue to produce Wheel of Time content for free, but if you could help us with some production costs, we would be greatly appreciative. We are asking for $3 a month, and to show our appreciation, you will receive an exclusive podcast every month. You will actually receive 2 exclusive podcasts every month because I am adding our Time Pop Patreon episodes to this Patreon to beef up the value and hopefully introduce you guys to your second favorite podcast. We do not want to put any Wheel of Time content behind a paywall, so these episodes will consist of us discussing a different fantasy movie and unfairly comparing it to the Wheel of Time. If you like the show and would like to support us for free, we just ask again that you like, subscribe, and tell a friend about Thank the Light. Check us out on Twitter and Instagram at Parched Ailman. That is Wolf Brothers at Parched Ailman. Or on Facebook at Thank the Light, the Wheel of Time podcast. Please send us questions and comments to thankthelight@gmail.com. That is thankthelight@gmail.com. Looking for another great podcast to listen to, head on over to whatsoundsawesome.com and check out our entire podcast lineup for your next favorite podcast at whatsoundsawesome.com. Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
Ishmael led us out.
All of us?
He had this sneaking suspicion you were going to betray him.
Where are the others?
You and Shamir were always too close to the dragon.
The rest of us don't share that feeling.
Softly, softly from the shadows, that's what you always said about me, isn't it? That I was too cautious, too afraid. Too weak.
You don't want to find me.
This is not a fight. This is a warning. When I strike, I don't miss. Stay away from him, Lafayette.